Radio Catskill.
Live from the Radio Catskill studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, could a new law give organ transplant patients a better shot at survival? For nearly 40 years, New York law has limited how organ transplant patients can search for donors. That could soon change. We'll learn more about the push behind the Heart Act and what it means for organ donation reform in the state. More than a century after John Burroughs walked the Catskills, his words and wilderness philosophy still resonate. Culture reporter Valerie Manzi speaks with the president of the John Burroughs Woodchuck Lodge about preserving that legacy and previewing some of their summer events. Plus, books, yes, but also events, tech, and community. That's at the Hawley Public Library. And the music of the Catskills band, the Far Trio. Coming up after the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. The House of Representatives has been at work all night debating the multi-trillion dollar tax cut and spending bill. They're now debating its final passage. Overnight, the measure passed a key procedural vote. That came after Republican leaders and President Trump persuaded a handful of GOP lawmakers to change their minds. Speaker Mike Johnson thanked Trump for his help.
The president's very engaged. He was, very helpful in the process. He helped answer questions and articulate his vision and what this bill will mean for the country and his agenda.
But Democrats say the legislation guts social services and millions of Americans will suffer. House Democratic leader Hakeem Jeffries has now been speaking against the bill for the last 5 hours straight. He read one letter aloud from a father in Iowa. Jeffries says the man wrote about what he faces if his family loses Medicaid.
My daughter is autistic and lives independently on housing provided by Medicaid. Before we had Medicaid, we were bankrupt paying for their treatment.
Jeffrey says the father warns his family will be bankrupt again if this bill passes. It's not clear when the House will take its final vote on whether to pass the bill. Stocks opened higher this morning as the Labor Department reported solid job growth last month. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrials gained about 290 points in early trading.
U.S. employers added 147,000 jobs in June, roughly in line with the average pace of hiring over the last year. Job gains for April and May were also revised up by a total of 16,000 jobs. Hiring last month was heavily concentrated in healthcare and state and local government. The manufacturing sector, which has been weighed down by President Trump's tariffs, cut 7,000 jobs in June, following a similar number of factory job cuts the month before. The unemployment rate dipped last month to 4.1%. Average wages in June were up 3.7% from a year ago. Wages have been climbing faster than prices now for more than 2 years. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
President Trump says he will speak with Russian President Putin this hour. Trump announced the news of the call a short time ago. The president did not say what the two would discuss. Trump has been urging both Russia and Ukraine to sign a ceasefire, but both sides have attacked each other. It's been more than 3 years since Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine. Overnight, Russia fired more missiles and drones into Ukraine. Trump is also preparing to meet Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu next week in Washington. It is expected they will discuss the war in Gaza, as well as the recent war between Israel and Iran. This comes as health officials in Gaza say Israeli strikes have killed more than 80 people in the enclave overnight. This is NPR. A federal judge has blocked President Trump's effort to deny migrants entry into the U.S. in order to apply for asylum. Trump had issued a proclamation on his first day in office, but the judge said that the president does not have the power to create an alternative immigration system. California Governor Gavin Newsom has signed a bill that expands tax credits for film and TV productions in that state. As NPR's Madalit Del Barco reports, the legislation raises the spending cap to $750 million.
Speaking at a movie studio in Burbank, Governor Newsom said California is trying to hold on to the entertainment industry, while states like Georgia and Texas and countries like Canada and the UK increasingly lure film and TV productions away with generous rebates and grants.
The world we invented is now competing against us.
and that we've got to step up our game.
Newsom also announced a new redevelopment program to add more sound stages. Actor Noah Wiley applauded the efforts to keep production in Hollywood.
This city has been growing talent for decades and decades and decades.
Wiley says it's important that his show The Pit was produced here. Mandalit Del Barco, NPR News, Los Angeles.
The canned food company Del Monte is filing for federal bankruptcy protection. Del Monte is expected to sell off many of its assets. Some observers say that consumers have been focused recently more on fresh foods as opposed to canned goods. It'll be hot today in the upper Midwest. In parts of northern Minnesota and Wisconsin, it could feel like it's 100 degrees today. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include AG1, introducing AG1 Next Gen, a daily drink with vitamins, minerals, and probiotics to support overall health. Learn more at drinkag1.com/science.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. During this year's legislative session in Albany, New York state lawmakers passed a bill named the HEART Act. If enacted, the bill would repeal an almost 40-year-old statute that prohibits the practice of multi-listing on organ donation transplant centers. While the bill passed both chambers, it needs to be delivered to and signed by the governor before it can be officially enacted. Elise Klein of New York Now and the New York Public News Network dove into the support around the bill and the push for other organ donation priorities in New York State.
Under New York State law, the practice of multi-listing on organ donation transplant centers is banned. During this year's legislative session, state lawmakers voted and passed a brand new bill nicknamed the HEART Act that would repeal this nearly 40-year-old statute. The repeal would allow New Yorkers on Medicaid who are in need of an organ transplant to register at multiple centers across the state. Assembly Majority Leader Crystal Peoples-Stokes, a Democrat representing parts of Erie County and the lead sponsor of the bill, says this bill will make an essential change to the law.
Why it was set up and years ago, I have no idea why they came up with that idea, but I know that it doesn't fit 2025, so we have to change.
The majority leader added that the 1990 statute is limiting New Yorkers to sometimes go to other states if they can afford it for organ transplants. Peoples-Stokes says if the state is going to encourage New Yorkers to donate organs, then the state should make the process accessible.
You're limiting people, and we should not want to do that.
State Senator April Baskin, a Democrat representing parts of Buffalo and a lead sponsor of the bill in the Senate, said at a press conference that New York is failing compared to other states across the country on this issue.
We are the state that gets in front of things, we get things done, and usually the other states are following behind us. But on this particular issue, New York is behind. This ban that was put in place in 1990 is archaic.
Peoples-Stokes adds the bill, if enacted, would eliminate the disparity between Medicaid patients and patients who can afford private insurance. According to 2025 data from the Organ Procurement Transplantation Network, Medicaid patients represent 27% of organ transplant waitlist candidates, but only 15% of recipients. The 2025 data shows, in comparison, that patients with private insurance constitute 35% of waitlist candidates and account for 37% of performed transplants.
People who are on Medicaid don't have the option of, say, going to apply in Buffalo and apply it at a hospital in New York City or apply at the hospital in Rochester. You can't multiple apply. You can only apply to one place. And that is ultimately, in my mind, a disparity.
Lise Kaler, the director of transplantation at Erie County Medical Center, says patients' ability to get on more than one transplant waiting list can improve their chances of getting one.
People that multi-list is what the name is for it. If they multi-list, getting on more than one transplant center, either in the state or out of the state, are twice as likely to get a kidney transplant, twice as likely to get a liver transplant, and will get that transplant faster, sometimes double as fast.
Kaler adds that transplant centers have varying wait times, and often patients needing transplantation don't have a lot of time to wait.
There's a large amount of patients that die or become too sick while waiting and never get a transplant. That's a very unfortunate part of transplantation, and by being able to get on more than one list, that mitigates that problem.
11-year-old Peyton Archie from the Capital Region has had two heart transplants in her life. When she was 7 years old and in need of her second heart transplant, she suffered several heart attacks and strokes while waiting for a transplant. Her grandmother, or Glamma, Delisa Archie, said it was scary to nearly lose her grandchild.
February 13th, she had her first heart attack. It was 8 minutes long. And I just remember almost feeling like a cliche in a movie. Like, I was screaming everything to her. Like, don't leave me. Come back. Don't go to the light. I didn't know what to scream, but just to, I was outside her door just screaming, come back to me, Dayton. Don't leave us.
Delisa stresses that enacting the Heart Act would give many people in need of an organ transplant a better chance at getting the life-saving care she's thankful Peyton was able to get.
It's important because time is not on their side. You know, while Peyton was waiting, you know, she had two heart attacks. You know, one was 90 minutes long. And the fact that she's walking, talking is amazing. You know, kudos to the nurses. And then she had four strokes, you know, and it's a waiting game.
Peyton says it was a very frightening experience.
It was scary at that time. I didn't need a transplant.
Peyton adds she's happy she got another heart to help her do the things she loves, like dancing and playing with her friends.
It's very cool that I had another heart.
Delisa says the heart transplants she's received saved her life.
You know, she dances, she goes to school, she has friends, and two families made that possible. And if they had said no, we might not have ever had Peyton.
The Archie family advocated in Albany earlier this year, along with other Donate for Life advocates. Delisa says she hopes the Heart Act is signed into law. In addition to some advocates, for some lawmakers, this issue is personal. Assemblymember Phil Palmisano, a Republican representing parts of Steuben, Chemung, and Schuyler counties, donated his kidney to his sister in 2006.
So Teresa, she was a juvenile diabetic, and because of it, it impacted her whole body, and she ultimately needed a new kidney. In 2000, she had her first transplant, once from the kindness of a stranger. And then in 2006, after the kidney failed, I had the privilege to donate a kidney to my sister, probably the most rewarding thing I've ever done.
Palmisano adds his sister was fortunate to get two transplants. Some people never get one. He says he didn't realize how bad the donation rate was in New York until he first came to the assembly in 2011. Palmisano highlights the state has made some progress in improving organ donation registration rates from about 23% in 2011 to a little more than 50% today.
We have made tremendous progress, and we continue to do so, but we have a lot of work still to do. We can and we must do better.
According to the New York State Department of Health, nearly 8,000 New Yorkers remain on the national transplant wait list for organ donation. State data shows that each year about 500 New Yorkers die waiting for a transplant. Lawmakers and advocates are hoping through the Heart Act to significantly lower the mortality rate by giving all New Yorkers a fighting chance to get a transplant. Aisha Tater, the executive director of Donate Life New York State, says this legislation could help reduce waitlist mortality rates by 20%.
It is going to have a tremendous effect based on the data. If you have the opportunity, which New Yorkers do currently have, to list at more than one center, those are the outcomes that we know exist for patients who list at more.
The bill was introduced for the first time this year and passed unanimously in both houses this session. Now it heads to the governor's desk, currently awaiting a signature or veto from the governor. A spokesperson from Governor Kathy Hochul's office told WMHT the governor will review the legislation. Many lawmakers are urging the governor to sign the bill. Assemblymember John McDonald, a Democrat representing parts of the Capital Region, says this bill is just common sense.
You know, I think passage of this legislation is just another effective tool to help connect those individuals who are willing to donate organs to also those who need them. I remember when the bill was first circulated by Member People Stokes, our sponsor, and I'm looking like at the bill and saying, we're not doing this already. It's such common sense to make sure to open it up to give every opportunity.
Other lawmakers agree, saying this is a nonpartisan issue. Assemblymember Robert Smullen, a Republican representing Fulton County, lost his 14-year-old son, AJ, last year after he was hit by a car. His son donated his organs and helped save a 30-year-old woman who needed a heart transplant. He says the governor needs to sign this bill into law.
You know, my son, AJ, was a donor. And we actually brought his recipient, Stephanie. I've met her. And this program saves lives. So I urge the governor to sign this so we can have multiple registries where people that are in need of organs can actually get the right organ at the right time to save their lives. It's only common sense.
Lawmakers are also hoping the governor will sign a bill that passed both houses to put a question on New Yorkers' tax forms about organ donation.
More people in New York State do their taxes than have driver's licenses. More people in New York State do their taxes than sign up for hunting licenses. So this is a very important step to get those donation rates from 50% to 60% over the next couple of years.
According to the State Department of Taxation and Finance, in 2023 alone, about 10.8 million people filed their personal income tax returns.
The question being asked, it just makes a pause for thought.
Palmisano says this bill, if signed, will help the state make progress on this issue.
New Yorkers are good people. They're kind and generous, and they want to help each other. But we have to get the question in front of them. The more we put that question, do you want to be an organ donor, in front of them, the more they're going to say yes.
Some lawmakers say while the state has made great progress on this issue, there are some New Yorkers being left behind. Assemblymember Jessica Gonzalez-Rojas, a Democrat representing parts of Queens, says immigrant communities face greater barriers when it comes to life-saving organ donation care. The Assemblymember sponsors a bill that failed to move this session that would expand state Medicaid coverage of kidney transplants for undocumented New Yorkers. Gonzalez-Rojas said the tensions at the federal level around immigration reform made some state policies related to immigration reform tricky.
Yeah, the challenge with the federal government is a real one. At this point, we're really pushing for New York for all to make sure that we can protect every New Yorker regardless of immigration status. So some of the other bills that would provide additional health support for them hasn't quite moved. And again, we're up against a very hostile federal administration that's xenophobic and racist and literally ambushing people in the street.
Immigration advocates for the bill say there are many barriers, including discrimination and bias, for undocumented individuals, even those who have health insurance, to get transplant care. Karina Abistege-Atler with the New York Lawyers for Public Interest says this policy could help address this issue.
It's an incredibly, sort of longstanding and difficult problem. So any move towards alleviating these barriers, diminishing, getting rid of them, I think is a positive move.
Abistege-Atler says undocumented individuals make up a large portion of organ transplants across the United States.
I mean, I think it really presents a major ethical and moral conundrum for the transplant system of this country as a whole, right? There's a lot of organs or a lot of donation relies on deceased organ donors.
According to one recent study from the National Academy of Sciences, roughly 3% of deceased organ donation after a patient has died, is contributed by undocumented immigrants. The study also noted that only about 0.4% of undocumented immigrants receive organ transplants.
We actually know that undocumented people do make up a significant portion of deceased organ donors. And so it would only be fair for undocumented people, non-citizens, immigrants, frankly, to be able to get access to transplants when they need it.
Abistege-Atler says she hopes lawmakers can get a policy like this passed. Gonzalez-Rojas says she intends to push for this bill next legislative session.
Health is a human right and shouldn't matter anyone's status when we're talking about accessing organ donations. Every life matters. And some of this can be life-saving for people who are contributing to our state and our economy and our communities. And, this is about equity and dignity and justice for every New Yorker.
Although the bills have passed both chambers, it's unclear when they will be delivered to the governor's desk at this time. Once the HEART Act and the tax form bills are delivered to the governor's desk, she will have about 30 days during this off-session time to review and act on them, either signing them into law or vetoing them. In Albany, I'm Elise Klein for the New York Public News Network.
And thanks to Elise for that report. We'll take a break, and when we come back, what's new at the Hawley Public Library? You're listening to Radio Chatskill.
Donna Fellenberg here. I've been seeing a lot of clips about elephants, highly intelligent and loving animals. So who better to have on Catskill Character than Richie Cheeger, the elephant's best friend and advocate. This show first aired in January, full of information about not just elephants, but cows, klezmer music, and teaching from the heart. Tune in Saturday at 10:30 for my guest Richie Cheeger on Catskill Character on Radio Catskill.
Hey, Kimberly Izar here of Farming Country. Big changes are coming for young farmers. Some good, some not so much. This week on Farming Country, we're at Finca Seremos Farm in Calicoon Center, talking sewage sludge, school contracts, and SNAP, policy issues that have real-life impacts. Plus, Julia Kim explores food justice with the Catskills Agrarian Alliance. All of that and more this week on Farming Country, Saturday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Amy Salinas is the Young Adult and Children's Manager at the Hawley Public Library, and she joins us now to talk about the library's expanded role in the community, from tech access and educational programs to resources for all ages, even after hours. Amy, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming on today. Hey, I wanted to ask you about the origins and legacy of the library. Could you tell us a little bit about how the Hawley Public Library got its start? I understand it was from the back porch of Betty Howell's house.
Oh, yes. A lot of our origins. You know, that's a great question. Our library has been around for many years, and it did start at Helen Decker. She asked for this library for her husband, and he built this beautiful library for her. And ever since then, this library has just been growing and expanding. And so much more of our community has been coming here and seeing how this library has started and how it's growing in our community. And it's just an amazing spot.
It's such a great story, the roots of that and the reasons behind it. For folks who haven't visited in a while there, what do you think might surprise them most about how the Hawley Library has changed since Betty started it on her back porch?
Oh, yes. So I would say there's been so many things, but yeah, I would say the most surprising thing today about our library would be our expanding makerspace. So our makerspace is a family space that has video games, STEM kits, Legos, board games, even craft materials and toys and more. The community has truly loved this expanding place that kids come every single day to enjoy and just be with friends and family. It's just a great space to hang out and enjoy a safe space for the entire community.
And you've always adapted to the evolving needs of the community. You've moved far beyond books and card catalogs. What kinds of digital and online resources do you now offer?
So some of the digital online resources we offer is Libby and Hoopla. So Libby and Hoopla are online apps, and you can download them through on your phone or your tablet, wherever you prefer to read or listen to audiobooks. And all you would need is your library card. And once you get your library card from here, any of the libraries in the Wayne Pike area, you can then access ebooks, audiobooks, movies, even music through Hoopla, and ebooks and just audiobooks through Libby. Those are great apps. And those are just some of the things that you can access just with a simple library card through the library.
And you also have specific things for, you know, all different age groups, as we said, evolving to meet them. What kinds of programs do you offer for these different groups, like children, teens, adults, and seniors? You cover young adult and children mainly in your role, but there's an expansive role of services that the library offers.
Oh, yeah. So we have plenty of programs ranging from children all the way to seniors. So we have things such as story time, Lego club, dog reading to like therapy dogs, game time and movie time. And that's all held in our makerspace. We even have an art and writing club as well as a book club for teens. And I would say for our adults and seniors, we have this fun new group called Yarn and Yak that comes and visits us every Friday morning. And we also have throughout the months of the year, we have like various craft projects for the adults and seniors to join in on. And it's really a blast. They come and meet in our community room downstairs on our other level, and it's just a great space great programs that we offer for the adults and seniors.
I want to ask you about the community support again. The resources have grown thanks to community donors and the generosity of the community. How are you guys funded, and how has that kind of generosity shaped the library's development?
So we are a nonprofit organization, and we get a lot of our money through donations and grants, and that really helps this library grow in that way. And that's how we were able to offer programs and resources and the services that we have here.
And you really foster this role of community in a rural town like Hawley. Also, if someone's, you know, hasn't been in for a while, they're new to the area, how can they start using your library services, even, you know, after hours when you're not open?
I would definitely say the first thing is definitely come in and see what not only our library has to offer, but like all the other libraries in this area. Once you definitely get the library card, like I mentioned with Libby and Hoopla, then you can access that on your own time. But when you come in, we can also show you the other things that we can, that you can do on your personal time. It's a really great thing to learn, and we can show through many websites and databases what you can access on your own time. So you don't have to come to the library if you can't do to work or any other personal reason.
And volunteers have always been essential to your story. What kinds of volunteer roles are available now, and how can people get involved?
Yeah, so if you come to our library, we have volunteer sheets, and we have a lot of volunteers. They love their position here. A lot of them are student volunteers. They help me set up programs, help run them, and even clean the library. One thing they love doing is decorating our library and making take and make crafts. Our take and make crafts are crafts that we prepare and we put in Ziploc bags so that kids can make on their own time or do here at the library in the makerspace for people to enjoy. We also have volunteer opportunities upstairs for the adults. If you just come in, you can fill out a volunteer sheet and we will find a space for you, and you can help us organize books, make displays. It's a really great and fun opportunity and rewarding to help at the library.
And what are some of the upcoming events or programs you're especially excited about this summer at the Hawley Public Library?
Ooh, that's a good question. So one that we are extremely, extremely excited about this year is our Scholastic Book Fair that will be held on Saturday, August 16th. There will be so many books to purchase, and we can't wait for the community to come by and check it out. It will be right here at the Hawley Library in our little backyard area, and there will be a lot for the kids to take a look at.
Are you accepting donations for that sale?
We always accept donations, so anytime we're open throughout the entire year, you can leave them at the front of our building, and we will add them to that sale. Yes, of course, to have on the side. Or we always have a book sale inside that people can take a look at throughout the entire year as well. But yes, we would definitely take donations for that as well.
What's the best way for community members to stay up to date on what's happening at the library, you know, how to donate, not only books, but, you know, how to financially support you if you need that too?
Oh, yes. So people can find out what's going on through our library social media, such as Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. We have been very active on all social media platforms to try to reach people of all ages to see what our library has to offer for our community and how the community can also help us. And we truly hope to see a lot of the community stop by and see our growing library. And we hope to reach people through social media.
And we started out by asking you about some of the origins and the history of the library back on Betty Howell's back porch, PTA mothers storing books they shared with each other, starting out with that first, you know, idea of a library in Hawley back in 1961. Before we go, what do you think about the next 60 years of the Hawley Public Library? What do you hope its legacy will be?
Wow. For the next 60 years of our library, I only see growth with not only our library, with the things that we could do for our community, with our community, more programs, a nice and bigger space, and just something the community could come and enjoy with more programs and more offerings for teens and adults, not only children, but I only see growth and good things coming in the next 60 years at this library.
That's Amy Salinas. She's the Young Adult and Children's Manager at the Hawley Public Library in Hawley, Pennsylvania. More information at hawleylibrary.org. Amy, thank you so much, and happy 4th.
Happy 4th. Thank you.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, the legacy of one of America's most celebrated naturalists right here in the Catskills. This is Radio Chatskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFRadio.org.
I'm Bill Williams. Join me Tuesday for a special fun drive edition of the Kingfisher Project. My guest will be Dr. Arthur Robin Williams, Chief Medical Officer for Ophelia Health, a telehealth initiative focusing on substance abuse. And I'll be live in the studio to ask for your support during Radio Catskills Fun Drive. Listen to the Kingfisher Project Tuesday evening at 6 and donate anytime at WJFFradio.org.
It's Radio Catskills Summer Fun Drive.
We need to raise $55,000 by July 18th.
And you can make it happen.
Keep local and national news, great entertainment programs, and life-saving emergency information on air in the Catskills and Northeast PA.
Give what you can, then tell a friend to do the same.
Support Radio Catskill at WJFFradio.org.
WJFFradio.org. Thanks.
Thanks.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Well, as the Summer Fun Drive gets started and summer unfolds in the Catskills, the legacy of one of America's most celebrated naturalists is once again in the spotlight. Culture reporter Valerie Manzi sat down with Vivian Yes Wadlin, president of the John Burroughs Woodchuck Lodge and publisher of About Town, a long-running Hudson Valley publication. In this conversation, they explore the life and legacy of John Burroughs, the storied history of his lodge in Roxbury, and a look ahead at the events planned for the season starting this Sunday.
Hello, Vivian, and welcome to Radio Chatskill.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, it's wonderful to have the president of the board of the John Burroughs Woodchuck Lodge speaking to us, because there's so much to know about John Burroughs and the lodge and the events that will be taking place there. The lodge, as you know, but our listeners might not be familiar with, is the lodge was built in 1860 by Burroughs' brother, his older brother, Curtis, I believe. And it is on the former homestead of the birthplace of John Burroughs. So it has a lot of significance, not the least of which he wrote numerous essays there and entertained people there, luminaries such as Harry Firestone, Thomas Edison, Henry Ford. I'm going to turn it over to you to elaborate on that history for us.
John Burroughs was born in 1837 and died in 1921. So he was around 84 when he passed away. In those intervening years, he did many, many things, including teaching school and, of course, writing. And he worked for a while in Washington, D.C. But the reason we're interested in him is because of his love of the Catskills. He wrote extensively about the flora and fauna of the Catskills. And he also lived in Esopus, New York, which is where he spent his married life. And I know of him because I am from Esopus, and I grew up not far from his other major building, which is Slabsides. And that is a lovely place to visit as well. Slabside gets most of the PR because he was there more of his life than he was at Woodchuck Lodge, where he only really spent the last 10 summers of his life. But when he passed away, The house was purchased by Henry Ford and ultimately ended up in the hands of our organization as a memorial and a tribute to him. And it is right next to the memorial for John Burroughs, where he is buried, and also Boyhood Rock, where he would go as a child and sit and just look out at the farm around him. And although he left the Catskills and lived in Soapage for quite a while, the Catskills were always, always closest to his heart. He lived on the Hudson River, and he remarked to his son that although the river was very lovely and exciting, it wasn't as intimate a place to look at nature and understand the world as was the Catskills.
And how did Woodchuck Lodge get its name?
Well, it was a farm, and of course the bane of all farmers were the woodchucks, which would destroy crops and create holes in the ground and undermine buildings. And so he had a proclivity for going out and shooting them. And in fact, he had a coat made from the woodchuck hides. And apparently he also would make stew out of them. So that's how it got its name. He had a certain respect for them, too. As one of my colleagues said, it was sort of a love-hate relationship with the woodchucks. And he had a very funny explanation of what they looked like. He thought they looked like a bag of water because they were so floppy and baggy. So that's how he named Woodchuck Lodge when he went to live there.
And he was also friends and had a lot of respect for another famous naturalist, John Muir.
Correct. Yep. He spent some time in California and other places, and he would go out in nature and spend a lot of time in California. In fact, when he died, he was coming back from there. He died in, I believe, Ohio on the train. So, yep, he was interesting in that Muir was more of a political actionary, if that's the word. And Burroughs had this, at least the way I interpret him, is he felt if he made you love nature as much as he loved nature, that you would then become a good steward of it. And I find that to be true of all the people who come up and visit at Woodchuck Lodge. They really do love nature, and they really do take to heart what he has to say about how to observe it. And it's just a really interesting character.
And how would one arrange to visit Woodchuck Lodge?
First Saturday of every month from May to October, we actually do a what we call Wild Saturdays presentation. And we have a speaker, or we have tours, and then we also have tours of the building. But the property has many features that are interesting in that there are fields that have trails marked through them. There are places that you can go and sit and read. It's a really lovely place. So there are a number of trails. You can go online and get a good map of it. The New York City Watershed Group has been very supportive of us. They underwrite all of our programs so that our speakers are paid. Our next speaker would be July 5th, and that would be John Duda, who is from Fleischmann's, and he will be talking about Roxbury in the time of John Burroughs. And he's a really interesting guy. He happens to be a friend of mine and a postcard collector, and he will use his extensive postcard collection to show what Roxbury and the area looked like in the late 1800s, early 1900s. So that's one. And then right after that, on August 2nd, we have Ron Knapp, who will speak on trekking through the rugged Catskills. Ron Knapp is a very respected author of bridges and architecture, and has spent a considerable time in China and written about their ancient and more modern architecture. Very interesting speaker. He's an emeritus professor from SUNY New Paltz. Then in September 6th, we have Annie Martinet, and she is a raptor rehabilitator. And her talk will be Catskill Raptors, and she's wildly popular. And she may be retiring from doing these talks. So I highly recommend, if you ever want to see her and the incredible birds that she brings to her talks. September 6th might be your last opportunity. On October 4th, we have Diane Galusha, and she is the author of Liquid Assets, A History of the New York City Water System. She's going to be discussing the Papaktan River and Reservoir. She's a terrific author and a wonderful speaker. And if there's anything you want to know about the New York City water system, her books are fabulous. She's also written other books about the cauliflower business that used to be in Margaretsville. And she's written about the CCC camps that were local. Those are our programs for this year. And we thank the Catskill Watershed for supporting them. And we hope that you come out, go to our website, jbwoodchucklodge.org, and you will see all of these things listed with the times that they will be presenting. You can go other times and just sit on the porch, but the building isn't open then.
Is there anything else you would like to add?
Yes, we are undertaking a complete reconstruction or rehabilitation of this 1862 farmhouse. So many of the artifacts have been taken out of the building and are in climate control storage. And in the meantime, we're still doing tours on our Wild Saturdays. So the artifacts are mostly not in the building, but there are several very interesting things still there. Plus the building itself, and explanations of what our plans are. We're, of course, looking for donations. And, of course, we are going out to the different foundations in the area and to private foundations looking for the money to make sure that this building lasts for another 200 years at the shortest. So that's where we are with that. I did want to say that it's located at 1633 Burroughs Memorial Road, Roxbury, New York, 12474. And right next to it is the memorial and the Boyhood Rock, which are pretty famous in his life.
Before we go, Vivian, I'd like to talk a little bit about you and the publication that you publish.
Sure. 42 years ago, friends and I had an advertising agency in New Paltz, and we decided that all of the small businesses needed a quick place to advertise that was not going to be wasting their money by being read in like Kingston or Poughkeepsie or someplace like that when these were little businesses in New Paltz. So we started something called the Guides to New Paltz, and it was about a little bit of history and a little bit of interesting things to do and a lot of advertisers. And we kept getting people asking us to, gee, can I get in it? I want to be it. I'm in Accord or I'm in Kingston. Change it to About Town because it is about all the little towns in Southern Ulster County. So I've been doing it by myself for about 30 years. And I do everything. I write the stories. I research them. I interview people. And I absolutely love it. And we're online as well as in print. And I deliver to about 110 places each quarter when an issue comes out. And I will do it till I drop.
And how do we access your publication online?
Abouttown.us.
And I was looking through it. You have wonderful articles there on local history. And I discovered that there was a Julian Burroughs. So you'll have to come back and tell us about him.
Oh, I would love to. He's one of my favorite people.
Okay, well, we're going to do that. Thank you so much for taking your time out of your busy schedule to share this wonderful information with our listeners.
Thank you, Valerie.
Thanks to culture reporter Valerie Bansi. We'll take a break, and when we come back, three musicians and a powerful sound. It's the Far Trio. They've been lighting up the Northeast for years, and we're going to hear from them and their latest single, Here and Now. After a break, this is Radio Chatskill.
On the TED Radio Hour, online shopper Aparna Mehta used to get a lot of packages delivered to her door.
Oh, per week? 12, 15?
Whoa!
Sorry, but I didn't think I was doing anything wrong. Look, the store is making it possible for me to order as many as I want and return back what I don't want.
Shopping and the state of fashion. That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Friday afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
On the next Jazz Night in America, we'll head to the Newport Jazz Festival to dig a set from an artist whose music is as sunny as the weather, guitarist Corey Wong. That's next time on Jazz Night in America. I'm Christian McBride. Join me for Jazz Night in America, Sunday at 8, here on Radio Catskill.
Support comes from Tavern on Main, a neighborhood bar and grill on Main Street in Jeffersonville, featuring local American fare, Saturday and Sunday brunch, and Thursday trivia nights. Menu and hours online at tavernonmainny.com.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The Buffalo-based band The Far Trio is a dynamic musical trio who've been performing across the Northeast for over 5 years. Eamon, Drew, and Ethan blend soulful grooves, rock, jazz, and blues into a unique sound that draws inspiration from legends like John Lennon and the Allman Brothers. They've got two albums under their belt, and their new single, Here and Now, is set to release July 14th. Here's a preview of that. We're just going to get the intro for now, Drew. Drew Azzanaro joins us right now from the band. Hey, Drew, how are you?
Hey, Tim. Great. Thanks for having me here.
Yeah, we'll get a little bit more of Here and Now a little bit later, but tell us a little bit more about the Far Trio. You three met over a decade ago at SUNY Fredonia. What brought you guys together musically back then, and what do you think's kept you together all these years?
It has, you know, we've definitely had to work to make that happen, but also the things that, you know, fall in line. You know, the things that, I guess, kicked it off, we met playing in jazz band at school. Ethan and I met, the drummer. He does a lot of, like, really cool world music stuff. He was studying tabla, and I'm really interested in that. So we kind of hit it off on those grounds. And Eamon came in to do a guest vocal spot, and there was we had a trade, a guitar vocal trade solo, and just, you know, I felt the chills, you know, when we were doing it, and just like, we're going to do stuff together. And it took a little time, but it all fell into place. We wrote a bunch. Eamon and I played in a bunch of different bands, actually, in Buffalo, and then he moved to New York. He then moved to Chicago to go to school, and I was in Buffalo, and but we just kind of vowed to keep working together, and played in different projects as a together, one called Lady Lush. It was like a six piece actually for a while, and we ended up just kind of finding our unit as a sound and really enjoying exploring, you know, what we could write together and the way that we improvise together, the way we hear music. You know, we think of it as a conversation, and it's really helpful to have the like minds on stage, you know.
And the name Far Trio, Far, F-A-R, is all capital letters. Does it stand for something specific, or is there a story behind it?
It's not a good story. It's just our last names. You know, it's a Fox as an arrow, rain, and Far just kind of seemed like the acronym that worked with those three letters. But we use, like, Far Out, you know, where we'll kind of as, like, one of our slogans, and so we try and make it work.
All right. And, you know, we talked about it a little bit here, your music blending soul, rock, jazz, blues, more. How do you describe the Far Trio sound to someone who's new to you, who hasn't heard you before?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's always a tough question. I think more and more I really like to think of, because genres can just kind of mean so much to so many people, you know, rock. I mean, is that Black Sabbath or, you know, yeah, is it Led Zeppelin? Or, so, you know, I kind of think of bands like what you did earlier, you know, I mean, the Allman Brothers is a huge influence, kind of both the aesthetic sound, but also the improvisational nature of them. So that's a big influence. But, you know, Eamon really came from more of an R&B soul world, you know, and that was part of his dad was a musician. So he brings a lot of that stuff, you know, yeah, so if I had to describe it, I would kind of say, like, you know, Allman Brothers meets, you know, I don't know, Bill Withers meets John Scofield, you know.
Yeah, what do those artists like the Allman Brothers? Also, you mentioned John Lennon before about their work. What about their work sort of speaks to you guys as a trio?
Well, you know, I mean, definitely their writing is one part. I mean, John Lennon in particular, there's just something about, obviously, we all love the reason why his name sticks out. It's something about his writing in general that just has such a organic, human, you know, nature that really spotlights very, like, one of our songs is called Ordinary Moments. That was our last album. And it's just kind of like, just the most simple things are the most profound. And I think he really grabs that essence so well, you know, working man's hero, that kind of thing. And the same with the Allman Brothers, you know, I think they have a very organic nature to their writing. But with them, I think it's also a little more of the performance in general, you know, the way they approach the spontaneity of the music, and that the song is kind of a vehicle for us to express on stage and have that conversation on stage together. And that was, you know, same thing with jazz, I guess, you know, the way that they are able to spontaneously just start communicating. And that's something we really try and approach, but from more of a songwriter standpoint. Bruce Hornsby is another guy that sticks out to me like that, where it's just really love his writing, but he is free to explore with his band on stage. So it's, you know, unique every time.
Your brand new single, Here and Now, is coming out July 14th. You recorded that in Woodstock with Scott Petito. You also worked with Scott on your 2022 album, Ordinary Moments, I also recorded in Woodstock. Now, he is someone who's worked with heavyweights like Chick Corea and James Taylor. What's that experience like, working with someone with that pedigree?
Well, it's, I mean, you know, at first that's kind of what's on your mind, but he's just a really great guy that loves music and is excited about it. And so it's kind of mind blowing, you know, where we look at sometimes we're like, there was just a picture that he put up on his social media, and it's one of my heroes, John Scofield, sitting in the chair that, you know, we were sitting in when we were mixing, and petting his dog that we were petting. And, you know, so it's an interesting experience just to, you know, to realize we're all doing the same things, maybe at different degrees of ability. But yeah, so it's also really great I think he captures the sound really well of what we're trying to do. So it's really satisfying to be able to listen back and not be just distracted by things that you don't enjoy sometimes, you know. He's a master of that. And he also has some really great ideas when he's willing for us to ask him, you know, hey, what do you think of this? And what could you hear that would go there? And sometimes he, you know, just a simple thing can make a big difference in how a song is presented, you know.
You've got two albums under your belt. Ordinary Moments was in 2022, and the first album, appropriately titled Volume 1, in 2019. Now this new single coming out July 14th. What do you think has evolved between Volume 1, Ordinary Moments, and now in your sound and your music?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that we are even more cohesive as a band. You know, we played, I think 150 shows last year together. And one thing I'm really kind of, happy about is I've done the sideman thing for a long time, and it was so satisfying to get to experience all these things, but to have one coherent unit, you really grow, you know. It's like the thumb knows how to work with the pointer finger, you know, it's one hand. And we talk a lot as we're in the car about things. So I think we've continued to grow as being one thing instead of just individual parts. And the songwriting has changed a bit. When we first started, I was just playing guitar and I would write a bit. And Eamon was the only singer, and he really encouraged me to sing more. And it's been 5 or 6 years of that. I think I finally can say I feel like okay saying I'm a singer too. But so I've wrote a lot. Now we kind of split. The last album was half Eamon songs and half songs I wrote. And it kind of brings a unique mix, both with our, not just voices, but approaches to writing. And so I think that's been a big part of it. And this latest one, we have 7 songs that'll be coming out. They're kind of going to be all just released as singles, and then we'll compile them into an album. But I think they also have we've got a little more of our roots in us, which was kind of blues and soul, and maybe a little less of some of the songwriter nature that we were maybe had on the first one.
You mentioned 150 shows a year, a huge schedule. Another one, 151. Tomorrow, July 4th, Sunken City Cider in Gilboa, New York, up there in Schoharie County. What's going on after that set, that show, and after the single release this summer? What do you guys have planned for the rest of the year?
Yeah, well, that one's cool. Yeah, so that July 4th show at Sunken City, they're a really cool place. We played there a couple of times in the summer. And then, so this weekend alone, we're going to be up at, in the Finger Lakes. We have two shows at Lucky Hair and Scale House. Then we're in Buffalo for a show and then kind of back in the middle of the state. And so we travel around, you know, we're up in the Adirondacks. You know, our website, fartrio.com, has all of our tour dates on there. And I think we're going everywhere from like Cape Cod to Buffalo, I would say, this summer. That's our region, you know, Adirondacks and, yeah, so in this area, we're going to be in Greenville on the 13th. That's kind of a closer one for people listening here at the Tasting Lab. That's July 13th at a cool place. But yeah, lots of we got some festivals. The Sausage and Brew Fest out near where I live in the Northwest Catskills will be a really fun event, and a couple of festivals. One out in Buffalo, Music is Art, is a really cool one put on by Robbie Takac from the Goo Goo Dolls will be playing that. Yeah, so just really excited to be, summer is the time that we really can gear up and get into the vibes of our playing. But we do play all year, so we're just fortunate to be able to keep doing it.
Yeah, and after the single drops on the 14th, you have an album in the works too?
We do. So throughout the summer, I think the goal is every 3 or 4 weeks, we're going to be kind of dropping a new single. And then in late fall, that'll be kind of compiled as an album. They were all recorded with Scott. Yeah, I think there's some really interesting, you know, again, we're kind of exploring a little bit more of our blues soul kind of side with some of these that just happened with the writing, you know. So that's really exciting to hear these new things coming out. And we're really just so appreciative that to be talking to you and having you share it, because it's such a saturated in a good way, so many people doing things, but it's tough to get your stuff to be heard, and we really appreciate the chance.
Well, no problem. We appreciate you being out there and bringing your sound to everybody. That's Drew Azzanaro, who is with the Far Trio. You can catch them in Gilboa tomorrow, but check out their tours all summer and all year long at fartrio.com. Hey, Drew, thanks so much, and happy 4th. We'll go out on a little bit more of Here and Now, okay?
Thanks so much, Tim. Really appreciate you.
Where do you have to go now? That is so much better than here. Don't even peek at your phone. I want you here, mind so flesh and bone. Look me right in the eyes, so that our souls, they can start to fly. Together we will multiply emotions. Yeah, we'll stir up this ancient cosmic potion. Here and now, that is where.
That's going to do it for this edition of Radio Chatskill. Tim Bruno, thanks for listening. And remember, our summer fun drive officially starts on Monday, but you can donate right now. Go to wjffradio.org and help us meet our goal. Your financial support is essential in providing our vital service. Stand with us. Donate now at wjffradio.org. Happy 4th.
Support for Harrisburg Union. Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. and from listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
How we make sense of the news and the world keeps changing. Who to trust and what's real are other moving targets. Let On the Media be your guide.
Saturday afternoon at 4.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at WJFFradio.org. You're listening to Radio Catskill. There's a possible risk of severe weather this afternoon as heavy thunderstorms develop and move into the region. The National Weather Service says wind and hail possible, but wind the greatest threat. Stay alert. It's 11 o'clock.